Why is it, do you suppose, that from time to time, in spite of our very best efforts, we get some kind of perverse sense of satisfaction out of seeing someone get what they've got coming? It was a cold day. The fellow had let his wife talk him into going by the mall and picking up a gift that she had ordered for a baby shower or something like that. And he came out of the store into the parking lot and got into his car holding that very fancy decorative bag, you know, with the rope handles and all of that, like those gifts come in. He got into his car, and as he cranked up the car, he heard this awful boom, 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 boom under the hood and turned it off very quickly, and fearing what he just knew was the case, he opened up the hood, and sure enough, a cat had climbed up in there on the engine, seeking a place to get warm while he had been in the store. It made quite a mess, actually, and so he took the gift out of the bag that he had gotten in the store and began trying to put most of what he could gather up out from under the hood into the bag, for lack of anything better to do with it there in such a public place. And the job completed as best he could, he closed the hood and looked around for a trash receptacle or somewhere to dispose of the bag, and seeing none, he set it on the lid of the trunk of the car and walked across the parking lot to a service station to wash his hands. When he came out from washing his hands, he looked across the way there toward his car just in time to see a lady coming by pushing an empty grocery cart, looking around suspiciously, going by his car, grabbing the bag and putting it in her cart and continuing on her way. Well, he decided he would follow her and see how long it took her to discover her surprise. And she went into the mall and directly into one of the restaurants there, and he followed her discreetly from a distance and was standing in the doorway watching when she had been seated at the table and opened the bag to see what her treasure was that she had. And of course, she screamed loudly as she fainted. And the management, of course, of the restaurant, understanding the public disturbance and the liability involved in such things, having a customer fall out in a dead faint in the middle of the dining room, he called the paramedics, of course, and they were there almost instantly from the substation there at the mall, and they got the lady loaded up onto the gurney and into the ambulance, and the fella who started all of this mess unintentionally saw the bag sitting there on the table where she had fainted out from under it and ran and grabbed it and said, "Ma'am, here, you forgot your bag." And he placed it on her chest as they put her in the ambulance and closed the doors. Sometimes it just kind of makes you feel good to know somebody got what they deserve. But is that the way we're really supposed to be? This evening, for just a few minutes, I'd like for us to think about the matter of the desire to get even, or to seek revenge. When people wrong us, when they insult us, or when they take our property, or when they threaten our rights. One of the toughest things in the world to resist is the desire to get even. Jesus said that if we want to see the kingdom of heaven, that our righteousness must exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, Matthew chapter 5, verse 20. I want us to look for just a few minutes at what Jesus has to say about the subject of retaliation in this lesson that I've entitled, The Second Mile. It's based on the text of Matthew chapter 5, verses 38 through 41, You will recognize this, of course, as being a portion of the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus said, "You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil. But if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles." As I said, one of the most difficult things to resist is the desire to strike back, to retaliate, to get even. I want to suggest to you that it's very important that we, as citizens of the kingdom of heaven, understand what Jesus is saying here. Now, there are some things that we perhaps may have assumed that Jesus is meaning that I don't think he really means, but it is very clear that there is a specific code of conduct, a specific way that you and I are to act and to react because of the fact that we are children of the Father in heaven. I want us to sort of set the stage for those things that will follow with this first point that I'm going to call getting what you give. And based on verse 38 of the text that we read, Jesus said, "You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth." There Jesus is quoting from the Old Testament. In Exodus chapter 21, verse 24, it's repeated again in Leviticus 24, verse 20, also in Deuteronomy chapter 19 and verse 21. This Old Testament principle was real. It was not just something that had been rumored, as we might suppose from the wording, "You have heard that it has been said." It was actually said. It was actually recorded in God's law. But it was a principle that was intended to establish a legal basis for assuring that injured parties received just compensation or retribution, while at the same time it was a method to limit the punishment to whatever might be commensurate with the crime itself. Now it appears that the eye for an eye philosophy had not always been practiced literally among the Jews, for even at the time of Jesus, physical penalties had been largely replaced by monetary fines. Nevertheless, the precept presupposes a world where violence and injustice are taken for granted. Wherever people interact with other people, there will always be transgressions. And so God had provided a means in His law to see to it that those who were transgressed against did not go without some kind of satisfaction. The eye for an eye matter was a guideline, it appears, to be sure that judgments were fair. In other words, an eye for an eye for eye, tooth for tooth, life for life was the way that it was stated in the old law. That was generally recognized as the maximum penalty, the maximum sentence. Now, as we know, revenge happens when someone feels that justice has not been served. And so, in an effort to prevent the feelings of revenge, God said that an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, would ensure that everything would be punished fairly and that it would not be left up to the devices of individuals to seek their own revenge. The problem started when people actually did that. When people started disregarding the courts or the system of legal judgment that God and His law had set up, and people began to try to seek revenge in those terms for themselves on a very personal basis. The eye for an eye was not meant to be carried out except at the hands of the designated judgment court. It had, though, as we have probably heard and read, become a real part of the practice of the people in that day. Over time, as they tried to seek their own revenge, they became just exactly what God had wanted them not to be: vengeful. God still does not want us to be vengeful. In Hebrews chapter 10, verse 30, we know that God said, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay," the writer says. And again, "the Lord will judge His people." Here in this text, Jesus is setting aside that which had always been the practice and is advocating a higher standard of conduct. The question, of course, was and is today, how far are you willing to go with Jesus? How far are you willing to go in trusting that God will do what He says He will do? From time to time, there may have been many of us who have suffered, even unjustly, at the hands of other people, and we are very familiar with the desire for someone to pay. In fact, we have an entire legal system, an entire branch of our legal system now that's dedicated to just such things. As I heard someone say just the other day, you know, you can sue anybody for anything you want to, for nothing. And that's pretty much come to be the practice today. Jesus is not saying that there won't be a payback. Jesus is not saying that we are never to defend ourselves in a complaint against us or in some kind of action. But what Jesus is talking about, notice He says, when we defend ourselves or when the one who is evil, do not resist the one who is evil. He's talking about the matter of seeking our revenge because someone outside the law has taken some action against us. This new standard Jesus brings is the second mile standard. Never let an attitude that desires revenge stand in the way of the practice of your Christianity. Never let the desire to get even prevent you from being the kind of witness that you need to be for the sake of the Lord. This brings on a whole host of considerations for us as we consider not only our personal lives but also our conduct in business. It's important that we go all the way back to the real principle behind what Jesus says. Don't let your conduct be a negative to the idea and to the fact that you are a Christian. Secondly, having set the stage with that information, let's go the second mile when confronted by insults. In verse 39, Jesus said, "I say unto you, do not resist the one who is evil, but if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also." I suppose if there was ever one passage in all of the New Testament that has probably caused us more concern or more thought or more wondering, this one would have to rank right up there with some of the best. Does that mean that if somebody hits me, then I've got to stand there and offer to let them hit me again? Do we teach our children when someone pushes you down at school, jump back up and say, "Push me down again, I don't care"? I think if that's our interpretation of this passage, then we've probably missed the point. Again, Jesus is talking about a principle. He's not saying that we shouldn't defend ourselves or protect ourselves or our families from harm. Jesus does say, do not resist the one who is evil. He's not implying that we shouldn't resist sin, but he is saying that we're not to take matters in our own hands. It's interesting that he mentions as the illustration the matter of slapping. According to the Jewish law, to hit a man with the open hand was a significant violation. But to hit that man with the back of your hand was the heaviest insult that you could ever use against him. You'll notice that Jesus says if someone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. As Jesus so often did, it appears that perhaps he even illustrates this principle with the most significant of all details. For if a person were right-handed, the majority of the people are, were to slap you and you were facing them, they would slap your left cheek, wouldn't they? And so in order to slap you on your right cheek, if everything is normal, then they're going to backhand you. And so Jesus says if someone slaps you in the very worst kind of way, don't take matters into your own hands. Don't be vengeful. Don't passively stand there and let someone beat you to death. But don't take it upon yourself to retaliate when insulted. Again, remembering the fact that we are the children of God and everything that we do, every action that we take, is a reflection upon what we profess. And so when someone insults us, the fifth grade tendency, with respect to all the fifth graders here, but the fifth grader tendency is to offer one right back. In fact, I've often heard parents say, well, I've told my kids, if somebody hits them, jump up and hit them back. Well, I'm not so sure that's always the best thing to do. I'm pretty sure that it would be difficult to justify that kind of response and reaction in every given situation in view of the fact that we are the children of God. Understanding, of course, that Jesus was not a doormat. Jesus did not advocate passively letting anything and everything be done. When Jesus was struck by the high priest, he demanded to know why. When confronted by insults, there's usually a better way to respond than to offer an insult in return. We need to go the extra mile, number three, when facing the loss of property. In verse 40, as Jesus continues this discussion, he says, "And if anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well." It's very interesting that God's law did not allow the outer garment to be taken from a person since it was designed to protect a person from the cold. The tunic was a long sack-like inner garment made of cotton or linen, and the poorest of men would have a tunic. The cloak was an outer coat-like garment that was made more like a blanket, And the man wore that as a robe by day, and usually at night he used that same garment as a blanket when he went to sleep. It was actually Jewish law that a man's tunic might be taken as a pledge, but not his cloak. In fact, in Exodus 22, verses 26 and 27, God's law said, "If ever you take your neighbor's garment in pledge, his cloak in pledge, you shall restore it to him before the sun goes down, for that is his only covering, it is his mantle for his body. In what else shall he sleep?" Again, Jesus illustrates the principle that he's teaching with an extreme illustration. Even though God's law forbade the taking of a man's cloak, Jesus says if someone sues you and takes your tunic, go ahead and give him your cloak also. He probably needs it as well. I added that last part. But perhaps that's a more sensible approach than the idea of believing that my physical possessions are mine and you're not taking them. I don't care what your impression is of me. This is mine and you have no right to it and you're not going to get it. Which of those two approaches would seem to be more conducive of the Christian example? This does not mean that we are to allow someone to take everything that we have. The principle, though, is that we are not to allow material things to get in the way of our witness for Christ. Sometimes that principle will cost us some physical possessions and property. And then, number four, we must go the extra mile when facing the loss of rights. Rights. It's an important thing these days. In verse 41, Jesus said, "And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2. The Roman army had a practice of commandeering civilians to carry everything from military equipment to soldiers' personal items. As the occupying army in Palestine, they had the right to compel civilians to carry their burdens 1 mile. A normal Jew in that day would grudgingly shoulder the pack of a Roman soldier, and he would know to the very footstep involved how far a mile could be marked from there. And at the end of the mile, he would throw the pack down, sometimes with a comment of, "This is as far as I have to take it. Now you can take it yourself." To that attitude, Jesus addresses this matter. This was perhaps one of the worst things that could befall a Jewish citizen. The idea of having to carry a burden for the invading armies of Rome. Jesus said, if he compels you to take it for him, take it twice as far. So he will remember that individual as either a grudging citizen who fulfilled the requirement to the very letter of the law and to the inch of the distance, or perhaps will he remember that person as the one who said, "This is not heavy at all. Let me take it for you a little further." Which of those two principles would leave a more favorable impression of one of God's children on the mind of that Roman soldier? Again, the question is, how far are we willing to go with Jesus? The whole principle behind all of this, as we've said, is the idea that we're not the world. We don't live by the world's standards. Jesus has called us to a higher standard, to a greater distance, to the second mile. Consider the impression, the witness that we'll have as God's children when we go the second mile. If you're subject to our Lord's invitation, we invite you to respond as we stand and sing.